Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Mpoga.
We have faced similar crises in the past. As a region, we have not been found wanting. This meeting can come up with far-reaching decisions to transform our challenges into opportunities.
ECOWAS authorities say the bloc will continue to pursue dialogue with Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso over the next 1 year to reverse their decision to withdraw from the bloc.
So we were operating in Abdul. We are trying to remember all the warring parties in this conflict to respect international humanitarian law, and especially respect the safe sounds of the hospitals and as well the medical structure.
The number of internally displaced people increases in Goma, the capital of the North Kivu province, and conditions for them are increasingly worrying after recent clashes around the city of Sake.
Protest is now spread to the other localities, especially in the countryside. I mean, some of the big towns in Senegal, like Kes, like Mbour, Kolda, and Tambacounda. So people are demonstrating everywhere. They are calling on Macky Sall to organize the election on the date fixed by the Constitutional Court. That's the 25th of this month.
And security forces used tear gas to disperse protesters in Senegal's capital, Dakar, as demonstrations against President Macky Sall's decision to delay presidential elections resume. Those and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Officials from the countries of the West African regional bloc, ECOWAS, met in Nigeria's capital Thursday to discuss the exit of three members, Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger, who announced their departure from the bloc last week. The bloc is also dealing with a brewing crisis in Senegal, where the president has delayed elections until December. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Thursday's meeting of officials of the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, was to address regional political developments, including the declared exit of three of the bloc's 15 member states. After a closed-door session that lasted several hours, ECOWAS said it will continue to pursue dialogue with Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso. But the bloc also said their decisions to leave will have consequences on the regional body and its citizens. Omar Aliou Touré is the ECOWAS Commission President.
Indeed, while we were waiting and hoping to see more progress in the countries in transition, we find ourselves with more problems that have been compounded by various factors. Despite our collective efforts to create a conducive and peaceful environment for our community citizens, the facts on the ground show that we still have some more work to do.
Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, all ruled by military juntas, announced their immediate withdrawal from the regional body in a joint communique last week. The three nations accused ECOWAS of abandoning its founding ideals and pandering to foreign powers. They also criticized the regional bloc's sanctions against military-led governments in the region, calling the sanctions inhumane. Then, days after the withdrawal, protests broke out in Senegal after President Macky Sall postponed the country's presidential elections from February to December. The decision was approved by Senegal's National Assembly, but has been criticized by many, like political analyst Ahmed Buhari, who calls it a constitutional coup.
Any time you interfere with the emergence of leaders in the democratic space, it is going to create shaky grounds. And clearly, this is an assassination on the constitution of the good people of Senegal. The executive, the legislative, and the judiciary are under the full control of the president. In cases like this, they are unable to make any decisions that will not be convenient for the president.
Senegal's foreign minister attended Thursday's meeting. He told journalists his country's political situation should not worry the regional bloc. ECOWAS was created in 1975 to promote economic prosperity among member states. but in recent years, the bloc has been struggling to deal with a wave of coups. Experts say bad governance is to blame for the trend and said the regional bloc must impose sanctions on Senegal over the election cycle delay. Nigerian Foreign Affairs Minister Yusuf Tuggar said authorities will fix the problem.
We're also here to review the unfolding situation in Senegal and develop a plan to navigate the resulting complexities. We have faced similar crises in the past. As a region, we have not been found wanting. This meeting can come up with far-reaching decisions to transform our challenges into opportunities.
Last year, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger created a bloc known as the Alliance of Sahel States and promised to defend their countries. For now, it remains unclear whether ECOWAS will take a firm stance against Senegal or make a concerted effort to bring Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso back into the fold. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
After recent clashes around the city of Sake in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, the number of internally displaced people has increased in Goma, the capital of the North Kivu province, and conditions for them are becoming increasingly worrying. Zanem Nati Zaidi visited one of the camps for the displaced and has this report.
In the Lushagala camp west of Goma, the new arrivals fleeing the violence in Sake and Masisi territory are arriving daily. Valentine Hangi, like others from her village who have arrived here, finds herself and her family without shelter. She says on Wednesday morning, they fled and ended up in this camp in Goma. Their children have nothing to eat or to do and are still roaming the roads. And she says they don't even have a place to sleep. They spend the night under the stars. The M33 rebels have been attacking Sake about 25 kilometers west of Goma and surrounding areas for several days. The DRC military has fired back and thousands of people are fleeing the area. Local authorities face a challenge in meeting the needs of this growing population. The crowding at IDP camps threatens to exacerbate the humanitarian situation, already precarious. Tabukanane, head of the Lushagala camp, says several displaced people died a few days ago, and she fears things will get worse. She says they're still counting the new displaced people who have arrived. In this camp, they've reached a figure of 2,000 displaced people from Sake. They fled and left everything behind. They have no pans, no blankets, no mats, nor even a tarpaulin to build shelters. She says last month they buried 9 displaced people from Karuba and Mushaki who died of hunger. She says she has great fear. Jean-Seth Marifa, a volunteer with the aid organization Agir RDC, is concerned about disease outbreaks in the increasingly crowded camps. He also worries about a worsening food crisis in Goma. He says for these people who have arrived and are now housed in churches, in schools where you can find 300 households with only 2 toilets, this means there is garbage everywhere, and he fears that there will be epidemics. But he also fears starvation for Goma. He says it's people from the regions who feed the city. As Goma is now surrounded, they fear widespread hunger. As more displaced people arrived in the camps, humanitarian groups say they are facing a shortage of aid to meet their pressing needs. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi in Goma.
The escalation of armed violence in Congo in recent weeks has forced thousands to flee, and Doctors Without Borders, MSF, has had to relocate staff, according to a press release by the humanitarian organization. Medical teams working in facilities across North Kivu in eastern DR Congo received huge influxes of war-wounded patients, mostly civilians, injured during waves of armed violence that has escalated in recent weeks. Since January 22nd, approximately 10,000 people fled their homes in and around Mweso in Masisi territory and sought refuge in Mweso General Hospital. For more on the situation, I reached MSF head of mission in North Kivu, Natalia Torrent.
So right now what we're seeing in the eastern part of Congo, in the Kivu, is that there are several front lines that are being active. And sometimes these front lines are very much close to the city centers or the civilians, where civilians are. We're seeing that there is a population that has been already affected by the conflict that has been for more than 1 year, which is mainly the resurgence of the M23. The population that has been already forced to be formed right now again for really safe, we're looking for safe areas. We're also seeing that sometimes the civilians are caught very close to the front lines or even in crossfire. And what we're seeing is that right now in areas like, for example, in Goma and some other safe places in the Kivus, there is feeding new displaced population.
The people there have had adverse effects because of the infighting there. So given this situation, how do you intend to help them?
So Doctors Without Borders has been present. We have a long-lasting presence in the eastern part of Congo, in the Kivus. We have several regular projects in partnership with the Ministry of Health here. We're working in hospitals, we're working in health centers. So right now, given the situation, we have been forced to reshuffle and reinvent a little bit the operations, especially this regular project has to be turned into emergency projects to be able to cover either new population arriving to the places where we are or new needs from the population. Especially when thinking about the population that is being displaced, we need to make sure that the basic services are covered. And here we're talking about shelter, we're talking about food, but as well we're talking about the water and the aging conditions, especially there is a lot of people gathering in an area. Because Congo is the place that there is a lot of waterborne diseases. I mean, it's a place that we see recurrent, for example, cholera epidemics. So we need to take care of the provision of the water and as well the regime to avoid these epidemics to come back. Also, it's a population that has been suffering from measles, has been suffering from other communicable diseases. And we're seeing as well is that right now we have seen several episodes that actually, as the violence has been reaching very close where civilians are, we also have been seeing that civilians are being injured or war wounded, and they're requiring emergency health care.
What assistance are you getting from the Congolese government and other international organizations like the WHO?
I mean, obviously there is a huge response being present in this part of the Congo. There is camps in around Goma that the humanitarian system are trying to provide them with services. But we're seeing that even before this last week's size of these last week's changes in the context, the population existing in the camps around Goma were not very well served. And I know that our concerns are that with the new wave of population arriving, the situation is going to become more dire. Well, Doctors Without Borders, I mean, the way we're operating, and as well, we are trying to remember all the warring parties in this conflict to respect international humanitarian law, and especially respect the state grounds of the hospitals and as well the medical structure.
That's Natalia Torrent, MSF head of mission in North Kivu. Natalia, she spoke with me by phone from North Kivu. Security forces used tear gas to disperse protesters in Senegal's capital Dakar on Friday as demonstrations against President Macky Sall's decision to delay presidential elections resumed. Protesters threw rocks in response as the police aimed to prevent an opposition gathering from taking place. Later, the protests spread to other parts of the country. A student at the university in St. Louis was killed in the northern town of St. Louis, according to local media. Saul said last week he postponed the election because of a dispute between Parliament and the Constitutional Council over would-be candidates who were not allowed to stand. Parliament approved the delay to the ballot at a heated session, but only after security forces stormed the chamber and removed some opposition deputies. Earlier, I reached reporter Alpha Jallo for an update.
This afternoon, the opposition and those whose candidacy were screened by the Constitutional Council and they were validated to go for the elections, the 25th February elections. And today, they and some members of the civil society groups have agreed to meet here at the public square, the main square here in Dakar, to hold a demonstration to protest about the postponement of the election by President Macky Sall. But as we speak, I mean, this is not happening because you have so many security forces here, and they are, you know, they have been posted in different positions. They don't want anybody to come near the square. Even some journalists are also being threatened by the security forces that they either go away or their tools will be destroyed by the security forces.
So are the protesters, the organizers of the protest, willing to go away or they intend to carry on despite the security forces stopping them?
Yes, they've been pushed now for about some 200-300 meters away. But then what is happening right now? Some angry youths are now coming from other streets like Fast Coloban, and they are burning tires. But then the security forces are also chasing them. So I'll just describe this as a running battle between the protesters and the security forces. But it's very tense here. As we speak, it's very tense here, because more people are coming, but we have also more security forces. They have been posted in all, you know, points here around the square here.
Do you think the protesters will continue with their protests, or maybe the security forces may stop the protest altogether?
Yes, one member of the organizers just was trying to speak to the journalist, but he's being dispersed, Mr. Kamara, Boubacar Kamara, who said that, now, from now onwards, until the 2nd of April, in which President Macky Sall's mandate should finish, they will not allow him. So every day, if he didn't fix the election on the date and on the 25th of February, so there will be no, they will keep on protesting. And just before that, also the members of some teachers' union today, they also held a sit-in protest. They held a sit-in strike. And all of them are also saying that President Macky Sall should respect the constitution, because this is, they are describing as a constitutional coup d'etat.
Douglas, the protest is now spread, to the other localities, especially in the countryside, some of the big towns in Senegal, like Kes, like Mbour, Kolda, and Tambacounda. So people are demonstrating everywhere. They are calling on Macky Sall to organize the election on the date fixed by the Constitutional Court, that's the 25th of this month. And then they said that President Macky Sall has no right to postpone the election and extend his term of office up to the 15th of December 2024, that they are not going to allow that. So everywhere, I'm talking to reporters saying that some of the protests march in Kolda are becoming so violent because they are trying to burn out, you know, petrol stations. But then the security forces are doing everything possible to contain them. So this is the situation. So it's no longer Dakar alone.
There has been condemnations for the postponement of the election by several international and local organizations. Has the government responded despite their decision to postpone the election?
Yes, there's been, as you are aware of, you know, your condemnations are coming from all, everywhere around the world, you know, all corners of the world, national and international, including the U.S., you know, France. And but also the president, also the government responded, because the government spoke passing. Mr. Seydougué said that, yeah, this is the best thing that the government should do, because if the government had allowed these elections to go under this atmosphere, there would have been a problem whenever, the election results are pronounced, especially if the candidate of the government, the back, you know, candidate of the government, Mr. Ahmed Bah, who is, I mean, for the coalition, Benno Bokoyakar, if he is, I mean, pronounced the winner, then there will be problem, because there were so many problems with the voter register going, also about this double, you know, dual nationality of Mr. Karen Ward, and also one of the presidential candidates, a lady, Rose Wadini, who is being just detained all these days because they also found that he also got a French nationality. So this thing, according to Mr. Seydouge, he said that these are some of the problems. That's why the president has just taken a decree to postpone the election so that they will discuss with the opposition, also hold a national dialogue so that everybody will come on board, and then they will organize a very free, fair and credible election on the 15th of December, 2024.
That's our reporter Alpha Jallo. He spoke with me earlier from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. When conflict broke out between the Sudanese army and the parliamentary group, the Rapid Support Forces, in mid-April, it quickly engulfed the capital Khartoum and spread across the country. In response to the unfolding humanitarian crisis, a coalition of activists and ordinary citizens organized emergency rooms. VOA's Nabil Biagio spoke with Hanin Ahmad from the external office of the Khartoum Emergency Room, currently visiting Washington, D.C. He began by asking her what the emergency rooms are.
The emergency rooms is a youth network was created when war broke out in Sudan, in Khartoum mainly. The need of creating it was to providing services while the or during the absence of the of government officials, agencies in, on the ground.
What services were you providing?
We provide evacuation, we provide food, wash, maintenance of electricity and water stations. We provide evacuation. We provide rape protocol for rape cases for the ladies, and even evacuate for the same cases. We provide soup kitchens, which are communal soup kitchens. It's a community trauma healing kitchen. We provide food as also.
So you talk about trauma and healing. That's, of course, your response to the war and the victims, you know, of the war. Can you tell me, how did that idea come about? Like, war breaks out, everyone is trying to flee, nowhere is safe. How did that idea come about?
When the war broke out, it was mainly in three areas in Khartoum: Bahri, Mazalat in Chambat, and in Umdurman in the radio and television station in Khartoum, in the sports city. Other area were safe, so that led us to, and the youth network where exists at that time, inside Hoot. So we created these rooms according to the networks are already existing on the ground, and we put a focal points. Two focal points in each hood, so they can give us needs, and then we can translate it into kind of project, and then we get the fund, and then we get back to them and give funded them, and they can implement the activities, different activities on the ground.
Of course, you are all volunteers.
Yeah, we are all volunteers, and we have professionals like engineers, doctors, and other kind of professionals. And also we have a resistance committee within the group. We are vary in skills and kind of skills and ages, and also gender. We have a gender sensitive body, which is we have a higher we have a representative from both genders, and we have also gender inclusivity. When we include women in putting strategies and decision making.
And tell me about the impact the emergency rooms have had. Give me a success story that you're proud of.
We are actually in Old Omdurman or in Khartoum area, Khartoum state, sorry. We evacuated a lady. She get raped, and we evacuated her. We provide the rape protocol for her. We also provide a psychological support. When she recovered, we provide a job. Right now she's working and she get back to her normal life. And also we evacuated people from South Omdurman, Al-Fatihah. We are in siege between SAF and RSF. They had the lack and famine, actually. They had the lack to access food and water. Unfortunately, during the evacuation process, we lost 10 persons, included 6 children. But we succeeded to evacuate 800 people to save their life.
That is Haneen Ahmed from the external office of the Khartoum Emergency Room in conversation with VOA's Nabil Biagio. You are listening to Nightline Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. But first, Zimbabwe's decision to abolish the death penalty, announced by the cabinet on Wednesday, is being hailed by human rights advocates. But as Cornelis Mavunga reports from Harare, not all Zimbabweans are in favor of the move.
Amnesty International, one of the rights groups which has pushed for the abolition of capital punishment in Zimbabwe, welcomed the announcement this week by Harare. Roslina Muzerengi is the campaign's coordinator at Amnesty International in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe has taken the right step towards ending this abhorrent and inhuman form of punishment that has no place in today's justice system. Now that the cabinet has given its nod, Parliament must ensure that the death penalty is truly abolished by voting to pass legislation that makes this a reality. We are happy that the abolition debate in Zimbabwe is gaining momentum. So, as an organization, we are just waiting to see the response by the Parliament of Zimbabwe.
In a message via WhatsApp, UN Special Rapporteur Mary Lola, who reports and advises on the situation of human rights advocates, said,
I am delighted that Zimbabwe has decided to abolish the death penalty. The death penalty is always wrong. It has never been shown to be a deterrent, and many innocent people around the world have been executed.
But not everyone is happy with the decision to abolish death penalty, given Zimbabwe's rising crime rate as the economy continues to decline. A senator for the ruling ZANU-PF party, who asked not to be identified for fear of losing her position, said she is against abolition of the death penalty.
As a people, as a nation, are we not perpetuating wanton killing? Life is precious. Life imprisonment in itself is torture. We have a parole system which is there that can review some of these judgments. Peace and closure to the affected families can only be achieved if they know that the perpetrator has met the same fate is their relatives.
Zimbabwe's Information Minister, Jennifer Muswere, this week told reporters that the decision to abolish death penalty was made after countrywide consultations, adding that
the circumstances attracting death penalty options include where the murder is committed against a prison or police officer or minor or pregnant woman, or it is committed in the course of other serious crimes, or where there is premeditation. In view of the need to retain the deterrent element in the sentencing of murderers, it is expected that the new law will impose lengthy sentences without violating the right to life.
Still, some Zimbabweans want death sentences to remain in the statute books. One of them is Tinei Mukuri.
There are circumstances when it's really aggravated, it's gruesome, it's a pure cruelty when someone kills someone or even several people. And then we say, that person needs to be rehabilitated, needs to spend the rest of his time in jail. surviving on taxpayers' money when the best would be just be to also to face the same death that would have been inflicted on other people.
Vincent Mazlakanta holds a similar view.
It's very sad that our government decided to abolish death penalty when there is a rise of premeditated murder cases here in Zimbabwe. People are killing each other. People are killing some other people with impunity. Some of them are even walking scot-free.
Parliament is expected to take up legislation that officially bans the death penalty sometime soon. The bill is expected to sail to approval as the ruling ZANU-PF party now has two-thirds majority and President Emmerson Mnangagwa supports abolishment. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
The AFCON final takes place this Sunday at Alassara Ouattara Stadium, where the hosts Ivory Coast and emphasized Nigeria side meet. One of them will be crowned Continental Kings. It's the first time since 2015 that Ivory Coast has reached the final of the Africa Cup of Nations. They won the tournament that year. Nigeria, who beat Ivory Coast in the group stage, have won the title three times. My colleague Amokbu Yaboro joins me now.
Mokbil, you attended the tournament at the beginning. First of all, your general impression of this year's Africa Cup of Nations?
Yeah, Douglas, I think this tournament has been probably one of the best AFCON tournaments thus far. It really showcased so much African talent across the board. The teams were really there to play, and it was really unexpected. A lot of shockers, you know, the big teams, the Senegals and the Morocco's really kind of got knocked out unexpectedly. So I think to me, that showed that the level of play across the board has been excellent in this tournament. And it's really just getting that much better across the continent.
Yeah, indeed. Many observers have said this year's tournament has been a shock. As you say, many top-rated teams were knocked out early by so-called smaller teams. And what do you think is that? Has the soccer improved on the continent? What has changed, do you think?
I think it's a combination, right? I think that the game has improved on the continent infrastructure-wise, but also I feel like some of the players that play in bigger clubs and they play in Europe or in other clubs in the world have decided to come back home and play for, you know, their home nations. So it's a little bit of a combination of both, in my opinion. Outside of that, also the coaching from some of these stellar African coaches have shown us that, yeah, there's ample talent, not only from the player perspective, but also from the coaching perspective, tactically as well for some of these teams. So, yeah, it seems like there is a new balance for football across the continent.
Yeah, and today is the bronze medal. Of course, final is the day tomorrow, but today is the bronze medal, third place position between DR Congo and South Africa. What are your views on that one?
Yeah, I think both teams played stellar. I think South Africa, Bafana may have played a little bit better than DR Congo did. They had a couple of chances in that semifinals against Nigeria that they really could have been in the finals, you know, had they won in penalty kicks or finished the game in extra time as well. They had a couple opportunities. DR Congo showcased a little bit more consistency throughout the group phases and their initial knockout games, but I think Ivory Coast kind of figured them out. So their last game wasn't maybe their strongest performance. So I think both teams will be coming out trying to prove not only to others, but to themselves that, hey, we deserve to be on the podium. So I think they'll both be coming out strong later on today, trying to get that third place win.
The final, Mokbil, West African affair. But who thought Ivory Coast, the hosts, would get to the finals?
I think who would have thought Nigeria would have made it too, because a lot of the bigger teams, the expected or predicted teams, all got knocked out early as well. So it's kind of two different narratives happening here. Nigeria were expected to be here, even though they didn't really play that great in their World Cup qualifiers, but they kind of started getting rolling. Interestingly enough, this is going to be a rematch from the second game in Group A, as Nigeria beat Ivory Coast 1-0 on a Victor Osimhen penalty kick that he drew, and their captain Troost was able to score that, and they won 1-0. We'll see if it's the same fate or if the Elephants have a different outcome in mind for Nigeria. Their big man Sebastian Haller just scored the winning goal, very spectacular goal against DR Congo in the semifinal, and he seems to be in form. So to see two stellar players in Sebastian Haller and Victor Osimhen for both sides playing at a high level, it's going to be an exciting match, Douglas.
Yeah, thanks, Mokbil. Enjoy the cup final. That's my colleague, Mokbil Yaboro. And now it's time for Athari Music Sport. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
Thank you. That's number one of me.
And that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, producer Nabil Biagio and engineer Nashwan Kali, I thank you for joining us tonight. And join us again tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Impuga.